Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the podcast from the Financial Times on the $5 trillion foreign exchange market. I'm Roger Blitz, and this week's events are steering us away from currencies to look at the broader market as we digest the sell-off in equities, their recovery, and what the week's events mean in the medium term. With me is Max Kettner, cross-asset strategist at Commerzbank. Max, the first question, give me the adjective that describes this sell-off. Lots of people have said it's a shock, it's a massive decline. What best sums it up?
I think healthy is the word, probably surprisingly, but I think it's quite healthy, even though the decline might have caught some investors off guard, obviously. But when you look at the characteristics of where particularly developed market economies are, you know, the ninth or tenth year of the cycle, wherever, whatever way you want to define it. So on any kind of metric, quite late cycle characteristics. And yet we had, you know, 1 or even 2 years of unprecedentedly low volatility, low market moves or low magnitudes of market moves, be it on rates, equities or FX markets over the last year and a half.
This low volatility, it was an instrument. It was a crafty instrument to get people to take profit on something that was, that really, people were saying low volatility cannot be so low for so long. And so it's proved. So is it good that the market has cleared out that low vol environment?
I think it is good because it finally ties together, I think, the macroeconomic environment that we are in with the market environment, because that was disentangled and that was disconnected for too long. Right now, I think, you know, even if some people fear more volatility to come, I think it's going to normalize probably in the near term and probably going to be a little lower again. So I wouldn't call bank on like extremely rising volatility levels yet. But right now, what we do see is a bit of normalization on, and, you know, tying together the economic development, economic environment with the market environment.
So what's going to happen to equities? Have we had the top in equities, or can they continue to rise?
I think they can. So when you look at the equity market, historically, I think even if you accept you're at a later stage of the cycle, you can still continue to go up. So you can still continue to buy equities.
Just not so fast?
Exactly. Okay. Just not that fast. And I think it's not surprising after a year where you had, you know, some sectors had gains of 40, 45%, like in 2017, to say, well, that's probably not going to happen again in 2018.
Single digit?
Probably single digit, or, you know, high single digit. That should be around the base case. And it should come with, you know, less of a trending market, maybe more trading opportunities such as we have at the moment.
Whenever we get a market jolt, I suppose, was what this week really was. People ask, could we see it coming? Was it predictable? You were thinking it was going to happen, didn't you?
We did to an extent. So we said in January, look, I think we titled our January update, a monthly update, reducing equity exposure on rising investor complacency.
It's gone too far.
Which is, you know, exactly what happened right now. But in hindsight, we didn't do that enough. So I think that may be also what some people have done, but probably the market, as we were also surprised about the magnitude and the extent of the decline.
Yes, but has it gone? Has the correction, I suppose, gone far enough? Is there more room to retrench?
Look, I think it's for a fundamental analyst, it's probably not reasonable to say, look, the bottom is in 2.5%. You know, 2.5% territory. I do see the risk that particularly next week's inflation data in the US and some real economic data in the US, that they will be slightly better than expected, particularly given favorable base effects in the US and also the favorable dollar depreciation, which is strongest in January and February. So that could be, you know, could be at least on the month of a month figure.
Well, let's look at inflation a little bit deeper, because that was the trigger for this correction this week, wasn't it? It was last Friday's wages data out of the US, which surprised on the upside. And actually, last Friday, we were starting to see a sell-off in equities, which was obviously accelerated on Monday. Are we right to highlight it as the trigger purely and simply? Or is it more to it than that?
Yeah, I think with these kind of events, it's seldom ever, you know, sort of August 2015 style where you say, well, that was China. In that instance, I think it was a mix of technicals. First, we had a couple of technical averages, such as 50-day or 200-day average broken, which, you know...
Average in what, sorry?
Average in prices, in equity prices. Right. So some equity indices were breaching technically important levels. Yeah. So that might have contributed. It was also the inflation scare. So the fundamental picture is probably the inflation scare that you saw from slightly higher inflation reading and then slightly higher wage growth in the US. And then on top of that, you have these, you know, the volatility target strategies or risk parity strategies, all these kind of fancy quant strategies these days, which are essentially, you know, highly geared fixed income exposure, which obviously in those kind of environments can prove quite dismal.
To the listener who might have thought that the great financial crash had ended all these fancy instruments, it might come as a bit of a shock to know that not only were they still here, but there are still plenty of them in the market. Do we still need to see those eliminated, or we'll always have these quite exotic instruments to make people try and make money in ways that aren't, if you like, pure and simple market behavior?
I think so. There's two sides to it. I think every cycle sort of brings its own innovations, shall we say, not only in the real economy, but also in the financial markets world. At the end of the 80s, we had portfolio insurance instruments, which basically bought momentum, which is nothing else what we see at the moment, right? in 2003 to 2007, it was CDOs and so on. I think it ties together with the environment that we had from, let's say, particularly 2011, 2012 until now, and then magnified from 2014 until now, the very low yield environment where a lot of investors said, look, I've got a 4-5% yield target. I need some yield enhancing strategies. Yes. And these kind of strategies oftentimes typically are these kind of, you know, yield enhancing strategies sometimes.
So they are here.
They are here for a reason. It's not only, you know, it's you can always, in hindsight, you can just say, look, this wasn't justified. But given where the, let's say, the central bank environment, given where the yield environment is, it kind of is justified given what kind of targets those portfolio managers have.
Okay. Another aspect of this week's market move was actually, it was just confined to equities by and large. Bonds moved a bit, but currencies, credit, barely noticed it, didn't they?
Yeah, I think credit, in the cash space, not really noticed an awful lot. Most of it was in high yield, maybe on the synthetics, on the CDS spreads. But again, I think that kind of tells you, look, we might be at a later stage of the cycle where maybe at some point they'll come slightly higher volatility. But if credit does not sell off and does not sell off even more than equities, it is an indication that we are not there yet. It is an indication that this is by no means the end of the world yet.
Yes. We didn't quite finish off our chat about inflation. We had this knee-jerk thing on Friday. We've got the CPI, the consumer price inflation, on Wednesday in the US, which is critical. And we might see a knee-jerk reaction to that. But we have to wait a little bit for a few of these this data on inflation before we can determine a trend. Isn't that right?
Yeah, so what we've said in our 2018 outlook as well was, look, there is a stellar and a really stunningly, you know, rock steady correlation between the long end of US Treasury, so 10 and 30 years, and inflation surprises in the US since 2017. So what you've seen is, with negative inflation surprises, people were basically buying long duration. Basically, you know, you had flatter curves, you had 10 and 30 years rallying. Now, what you've seen with one or two prints were enough already, as you said. Those were, you know, it was not like a new trend is established all of a sudden overnight. But one or two prints already were enough to send, you know, the curves slightly steeper and to send the long end of the US Treasury curve in terms of yield, send it up. So, and I think that's probably going to have a little bit more room. And we said that in our 2018 outlook, if you're scared about inflation, and if you think there's going to be a bit of more trend, then probably the one way to protect you best is go against the market. Don't put on flatteners, actually put on steepness. And if you look at, if we go back to currencies now, if you look at the correlation and, you know, the sensitivities of dollar versus rate differentials, obviously the short end doesn't play much of a role anymore. Yes. If you look at longer end rate differentials, they play much more of a role. So if you do see slightly steeper curves, the longer end coming out a little bit higher still, then there might be even a case for more dollar appreciation over the next couple of weeks.
We've seen a bit of dollar appreciation this week, but we've been the main thing we were all talking about until this equity correction this year was dollar weakness. Does this dollar appreciation, you know, fizzle out quite soon, do you think?
So the dollar appreciation, our FX strategists do see a slightly stronger dollar. I would buy into that slightly stronger dollar, yes, because I think what we have seen in 2017 was many investors basically banking on a synchronization of the growth cycle. So just to, you know, just to highlight what I think
everybody's growing.
Exactly. Everybody's growing at sort of potential or slightly more than potential growth. I think what has happened in 2017, and that has driven large parts of the dollar weakness, was, you know, you had the dollar, you had the US economy at a later stage of the cycle, and it was widely accepted that you had the other economies basically lagging. So those ones were catching up in 2017. The US is stuck at a later stage of the cycle, not yet overheating. So the other ones, as they catch up, also so do their currencies. And that, I think, drove the dollar weakness. I think this is slightly going to change in 2018. We're going to find out there is more divergence across the global economy. It's not that synchronized.
You don't think there's...
I don't think
the policy normalization is going
to
be everything.
I don't think it's
going to
be a global phenomenon.
Right.
And with that, if there is more divergence, if there's more, let's say, disparity between global growth between different regions, different countries, with that, there should be more, you know, strategically, there should be more dollar strength in store then.
Dollar weakness until mid-year, then probably strengthening towards the end.
Hopefully.
Bank of England, Max, we can't finish podcast without talking about the Bank of England. What did you make of the hawkish tone, which really took the market a bit by surprise.
It took me by surprise. I think from a growth perspective, the latest data that we have actually indicate there is an increasing divergence going forward in terms of growth with the Eurozone, and not particularly in favour for the UK, but more in favour for the Eurozone.
So why is Mark Carney so upbeat?
It's, you know, maybe he's saying, look, with fewer news on Brexit and fewer distracting news on the Brexit negotiations, we have more time to concentrate on economic fundamentals. And we now can say, which aren't that great, but also not that dismal. So maybe you can say, look, we do not need that kind of massive degree of accommodation.
Yes.
Fair enough. But would I bank on a May rate increase already? I'm not too sure. You know, I think what the market has done today, I think it's like priced by 60-70%.
It's up to 70% in May.
It's a bit too much, I think. So I wouldn't really bank on further sterling gains from here.
I mean, of course, Mark Carney has talked up the idea of rate hikes. He soon might be having to talk them down again.
So it's, you know, we don't know what is going to happen with Brexit negotiations. Obviously, the news flow, if not supportive, but it has become slightly less dismal relative to 6 months ago, but I wouldn't call it supportive by any means. So it remains a highly politicized issue, I think, and the Bank of England could find itself easily in an environment, in a situation where they say, well, we'd like to focus on economic fundamentals, but actually politics don't allow that.
Just finally, Max, after this week, is this volatility, increased volatility, going to change how central banks view their rate paths, or are they just going to ignore it?
I think largely they're going to ignore it. If anything, maybe the Fed can take it up, but I think that won't really change the rate path. The ECB won't really take that as an excuse, I think, because when you look at Eurozone inflation, we still look for Eurozone inflation to be surprisingly weak, particularly in the first half of this year, particularly the first maybe 4 months. That's because of some special effects and also because of the stronger euro. If that comes into play, then the ECB is anyway kind of boxed in into a situation where they can't really be too hawkish. So they won't really need the volatility increase as an excuse.
Yes. Okay. My thanks to Max Kettner, of Commerzbank. So after the market excitement of the week, things are feeling a bit calmer, but are they about to get turbulent again? Next week is that all-important inflation data out of the US. Hold on to your hats and join us again for Hard Currency. Until then, it's goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.